college formed it in what way?
Well, I decided that to go to law school, which I was going to do, economics was a good major. Although my Italian professor wanted me to get a PhD in Italian lit. And I toyed a little bit with the idea, but I never really abandoned the wanting to be a lawyer. So the economic philosophy, I was lucky in my elementary economics class, which I didn't take until freshman year because I was my sophomore year, because my freshman year I got all the classes that they picked scholarship students with high predicted averages, and they put them in these small. I only had 15 people in my Shakespeare seminar, and of course the Italian class was small because it was an Italian class, but I'd go into a small physics class, advanced physics class, and advanced mathematics class. But I took economics in my sophomore year. Excuse me.
Sure.
Psyche, my first wife, she was actually a member of the IP caucus that I talked about earlier. And my second wife was born in Italy. Her father was a surgeon in Italy, but the family left due to Mussolini joining Hitler. So that was the history of the checkered marital career. But Steven Silverstein is a second marriage, and he was my stepson. He and Judith Silverstein, who keeps her maiden name, she's a doctor in Northern Connecticut now. Okay, but we're
talking about your economics class.
Yeah, well, so my economics class, Irsten R. Barnes taught elementary economics, economics 10, the way the numeration was at the Yale undergraduate courses then. I don't know whether they've ever changed it. Most colleges, it's 100, I think, the first course. And he was a liberal. He was a New Dealer, which was kind of rare. Of course, Yale's economic department did not then have the prominence that it does now, with a couple of Nobel Prize winners and, of course, one of the economists now president of the university. Then it was the very poor second to Harvard and to probably even MIT, you know. But Barnes, younger guy, he was a liberal. The Yale economics department had Fairchild, Furness, and Buck, who wrote the text, but they also had, who was it? Was it Fisher who was the dollar? He's talking about it in the 20s before the Depression made his economic theory not very, very valuable, but it was obviously a defense of the conservative establishment. But Barnes was a liberal, and no question about it. He gave you the opportunity to read the Times. No, I think everybody had to read the New Republic. And then he'd give quizzes upon New Republic subjects. That plus the minority history certainly helped formulate what had already was there in terms of an economic philosophy. And Barnes was very influential, I must say. I mean, I really haven't really stopped really to verbalize that until not right now, but he was. And reading The Republic, I mean, I still get The Republic, although it's not quite the liberal piece it was then, but in terms of the history, I mean, it was still pretty liberal when Jack Kennedy was president, and they saw the copy of the New Republic on the desk. Yeah. You know, it's now gotten a few writers from the right, but it's still a good paper for intellectuals anyway. And that kind of really hardened, whole economic leaning, but I remember, and I talked about Shep Peletz earlier. Peletz coming out of New York, he was liberal. His roommate was from Westport, who had actually been in high school a year ahead of me in Westport, John Heller. Heller wasn't great politically anyway, but he was more conservative establishment type. He had acculturated in the Westport system. But Peletz was a liberal, and he was one of my closest friends in undergraduate school. And of course, then the political union, which I joined, I guess, in my sophomore year, that helped. I had a couple of Jewish roommates in Saybrook. I guess the part of the reason that they latched on to me is because in getting rooms in the colleges, a few people didn't make it. Then there weren't quite enough. The Silliman hadn't been expanded to include more rooms, so that they didn't quite have enough rooms for all the upperclassmen. But since I was Dean's List, I had no problems. I get more, you get priority. So they, David, no, Gosweiler wasn't Jewish. Gosweiler's father was, but Weiner was. They joined with me about a freshman year, so that they could make sure they get into college. And also we had a kind of affinity of interest, although Gosweiler's father was a New York Symphony, I think that's what he played. And Gosweiler always tells stories about Toscanini. And Weiner's mother, I think, was a school teacher who was widowed early, but she came out of Mount Vernon. They came out of Mount Vernon. So that was... And again, I'm not... In terms of the Catholicity of the contacts, I mean, I had them in the Yale community, and these weren't white shoeboys.
Right.
They weren't the Italians either. But they tended to be people who, you know, who were more liberal. Of course, Gosweiler was a little bit odd. I don't know whatever happened to David, but and Herb ends up as teaching at the forestry school, Herb Weiner, at Yale now.
I interviewed him too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, I don't really know, apart from the fact that his mother was widowed, and I think she had been a school teacher. I didn't really know what his father ever did. I mean, his father had some money, though, I think. I'm not sure, but I think that's it.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I remembered Mount Vernon, but...
Well, anyway, that... Yeah. In terms of the exposure to parts of the American society, that certainly was one of the things, and it happened very naturally. I mean, both of them were a little crazy. They got involved in take up one of the Merriam-Webster dictionary out of the college library. I don't know what kind of punishment they did for that. But my Italian professor told me the meeting. This is interesting now, he's talking about the meeting, about how at the faculty meeting about the theft of this dictionary. It was announced by Smith, who was a sleazy, conservative kind of character, then head of the economics department. But he was the master of the college. They don't know whether they call him masters anymore. They still call him masters. But anyway, he announced at the meeting that one Jew and one American boy were involved. I mean, my Italian professor tells me this. Yeah. And he says, but the Italian boy was their roommate. He wasn't involved. You know, this is the. I remember Liberty telling me that. So, yeah, this is another story to leave, but he told me that when he came to be, this is, well, I don't know what the hell I'm talking. You're recording, go ahead. When Liberty came to Yale from Wisconsin, Liberty had come to the United States from Sicily when he was a boy and gone to Columbia by bait, and then he got recruited in World War I because of the language, so he was kind of liaison with Italian forces and Americans. And he stayed there and got himself a doctorate in Italy. And then he came and he taught at Wisconsin, and Wisconsin had Michael Ivanovich Rostovtsev, one of the greatest historians of ancient Rome, who was teaching at Wisconsin. Yale wanted him. And that's because of Rostovtsev's influence. Liberty was able to come from Wisconsin to Yale to teach Italian. But he said when he was interviewed to teach, they wanted to know whether he was Jewish. And he paraded his Catholic credentials. So, but I you know, these little, I forget most of these little things. I'm just kind of, you're giving me the opportunity to deal back into what apparently trivia, but anyway. This is all part of the, of where I come from in terms of formulating economic liberalism, no question.
Were you involved with any of the other union efforts in New Haven or elsewhere before you became a lawyer?
No.
There was some leaflet at Winchester. And,
no, I didn't do... Well, let me see. Winchester, during World War II, that term that I was in law school, I think they had an explosion. Went out with somebody else from law school to look, but no. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to, my contacts. No, my contacts, at that time, I went at the age of 21, when I graduated from college, I had been to New York City once from Westport. Because I was on the junior high school paper, and the social science teacher, whose name was Castiglia, and then she married Cerisi, which of course I mentioned because I think that's relevant, she brought the staff of the paper down to Columbia for the junior press conference or something. And we went down one time, it was St. Patrick's Day that the conference was on. That's the only time I'd been to New York, living only 45 miles away. So that in a sense, Yale was... Yeah, my lifetime experience, not even Westport, it was Saugatuck. I mean, it was that circumscribed. Plus the fact that both my parents were very much interested in education, so we weren't permitted to mix. We had to do homework. And we stayed close to home. We didn't even... A lot of the boys joined the YMCA, which was 2 miles away, but we weren't permitted. We had to do homework at home. I mean, that was part of their, the parental influence, the need for education, and not to get deviated, so that circumscribed even more my life before World War II. I mean, you'd think there'd be anybody telling you now, you live 45 miles from New York, and in 21 years you've been there once, and only because the school took you, But it was a different world, we had a car. My father first, I guess, had a truck but then he got a car. But, I mean, we had a car pretty early in life, although I do remember horse and wagon very, very young. I remember he had that for delivery. And we were relatively well off in terms of the people around us, but it was still pretty circumscribed. My mother never learned to drive. That's part of where. Well, anyway, where were we in terms of your history here?